Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. This is your host, Jim Masters. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio, a service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. A pleasure to have you here, and thanks for making us a part of your day. Today, on this episode of Close Up Radio, I have the great honor and pleasure of sharing with you and having an opportunity to have an extraordinary conversation with an extraordinary person, the most unusual expert witness. His name is Ned Einstein. He's the president of Transportation Alternatives, which is an expert in the field of public transportation. It is my pleasure to welcome him live and direct from New York to Close Up Radio. Mr. Einstein, thank you very much for joining us here on Close Up Radio. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you with us and joining us today.
Great. Thank you.
What are your goals? I know you have goals for our conversation today. What are you hoping results from our 30-minute conversation we're about to have?
Okay, well, as a preface, I'm at a point I'm semi-retired, and I'm only looking really to do a few cases a year, mostly against the handful of really major crooked companies that are sort of destroying my field, the transportation field, and killing and maiming the passengers, usually deliberately. They include companies like MTM, Logisticare, Lyft, Uber, Bird Rides, Amtrak, and commercial airlines. Those are my favorite defendants. And if you get, anyone listening, if you get a call against one of these beasts, please call me. Otherwise, as I said, semi-retired, this presentation is not intended for me to sell myself. I have basically four goals today, as you asked. They are, number one, to share as much information as I possibly can with attorneys about how to choose an expert, what characteristics he or she should have, and choose an expert who can help attorneys succeed and win big on either side of the table. A second goal is to tell the truth about what public transportation in the United States really is and what it really isn't. A third goal is to share some principles related to success in law school, in a lawsuit rather. Principles often not well known, not well understood, and often not employed that I use very successfully. And finally, to help, to help attorneys understand what experts think of most attorneys. Most experts won't say these things, but I will, yeah. I feel, will be helpful.
That's just great. You're a straight shooter. You're the real deal. You're authentic. You get to it, and that's what I love about the work that you do. Now, you're using yourself, obviously, as an extraordinary role model to help attorneys really understand what to look for in an expert. There are key things to look for. Why do you think that makes you such a good expert witness and you really stand out in your work?
Well, I've had an unusual bunch of experiences. As a starting point, I've been in the public transportation field for 48 years, and I've been in every part of it. As an expert witness, I began doing this stuff little by little 34 years ago. So at this point, I've done like 700 cases. I have an undergraduate degree in English literature, and I've written more than 300 magazine articles and several full-length publications, so I can communicate and I can write. I also have a master's degree in urban and regional planning, and I even attended law school for one semester a long time ago. I'll get to that later. But I've also had a lot of luck in doing projects of all kinds in every sector of the industry. In other words, I've worked most experts work in one mode or something. They know a lot about one mode, but I know a lot about every single one because of the nature and the luck of my career. This includes school buses, fixed route transit, paratransit, non-emergency medical transportation, motor coaches, creatures called transportation network companies like Uber and Lyft. That's the formal name for them, TNCs. I've done work in taxi areas. I've worked on shuttle cases, and I've worked on passenger rail cases. I've actually done 5 cases against Amtrak. So because of other things I'll get to also later, I worked on both the operating side of the field, which most experts do, but I've also worked on the automotive side, and I'll get to that below. So I have a really unusual spectrum of experiences that I think in general prepared me to do almost every type of case. And again, I take the ones I want, and I take the ones I think I'd be best at, but I have quite a number to choose from.
That's absolutely extraordinary. Maybe you can expand upon your range of experiences as an expert and also your success rate as well.
Okay. I've done, as I said, around 700 cases. I really have records of almost every one of them. I've had 75 depositions taken. I've gone to trial 37 times. I've never lost a case on the defense side, never. Although, in fairness, attorneys know this, most carriers are going to settle every case, even though in cases where I would have blown the plaintiff away, they still settle. But I've never lost the defense case. I've lost 14 on the plaintiff's side. But now, while I'm not perfect and I make mistakes like everyone else, almost every trial loss was my attorney's fault, not mine. A couple were poor jurors. And also, like many experts, I do work on both sides of the table. I tend to take cases, I take cases really based on the merits as they're presented to me and based on my knowledge of the industry standards, knowledge of regulations, and what I call industry dynamics. In other words, I know which parties in every sector are the major players in the country, and I know which ones are not going to trial, and I know that in every sector. So I had, again, this is another way of spelling out experiences I had.
So for the audience, to really grasp what we're talking about here and have a real appreciation for it, because you're doing just a beautiful job in laying it all out, Mr. Einstein, what kind of cases does an expert in public transportation actually do? Maybe you can share a few examples from your own experiences.
Okay, mine are typical of not a reconstructionist that does collisions, but more typical of someone who knows about planning and operations and system design. Of the 700 or so cases I've done, at least 150 of them involved wheelchair tipovers. At least 170 of them, might be as much as 180 or 190, involved boarding and alighting, just getting on and off the vehicle. Like the simplest degree of difficulty, a fourth of the accidents had to do with that, or drivers closing doors on passengers and stuff. Of those, at least 50 of them involve walker or cane users. I've done 100 crossing cases. I've done more than 20 involving passenger molestation. I worked on 4 class action suits, all related to the Americans with Disabilities Act, and several labor relations cases. So most of the cases I did involve 5 or 6 basic themes.
That's fantastic. It's absolutely incredible when you really think about it. It's amazing. In your cases, what are some of the advantages you feel you have that have helped make you an effective expert witness?
Now that's a great question and a very interesting one for me. I feel I've been really blessed with amazing opportunities for someone who evolved into an expert, and some of this, quite frankly, it was pure luck. I just fell into some of these opportunities. Some of them I earned, some of them were coincidence, some were timing. But to list them, I managed the first Transit Productivity Conference in 1977. It was sponsored by USDOT. And I directed a couple years later, I directed USDOT's first examination of special transportation systems for elderly and disabled people. We examined 30 systems in 18 cities. And then I directed the operations of my own 70-vehicle transportation system, a door-to-door, curb-to-curb system, for physically and developmentally disabled adults and infants for 10 years. So we did 2,200 trips a day for 10 years, and hundreds of them were wheelchair users. So in what I estimate is 29 million miles of service, we had one single passenger injury in a decade, in all those miles. I never had a wheelchair tip over. And remember, I did about 150 lawsuits involving these. We never had one. Otherwise, with one exception when our driver fell asleep at the wheel, we never had any incidents like any of those of the 700 lawsuits I've worked on. So I ran almost the most perfect system in the world. Never had wheelchair tip-overs. Nobody ever flew out of a seat unseat-belted. No one got hurt getting on or off a vehicle. No molestations. No vehicle-to-vehicle collisions. No crossing incidents. We never struck a pedestrian, a bicyclist, or a motorcyclist. We didn't have any of these things. I operated a system that didn't have any of the incidents that you know, I deal with in lawsuits. But in saying that, and to put that in context, part of this was because I designed all the schedules, not robots. And our schedules were not tight. We didn't rely on robots for critical operating functions like scheduling and dispatching and picking stops and that stuff. I also am sort of the master in monitoring. I must have reviewed at least 200,000 driver's logs during the decade I was in operations. I also paid, because I could schedule effectively, I'd win bids, so I paid our drivers at least 1.5 times what anybody else did. I had a very thick management team. So these are characteristics of a good system, and I don't usually find that in the cases I've done. So I had an experience for a decade of doing this right, so I know what's not right. On cross-examination, by the way, it was very interesting. No one ever asked me about my own operating experiences. I think they're frightened about what I might say, but I'd say things like this. And then that was my 10 years in demand responsive transportation. I've also done a lot of other interesting things. I designed and redesigned a decade later the nation's only fixed route transit system, mostly for school children. Not a school bus system, but a transit system ridden mostly by school kids. I was also a joint venture partner with a bus and truck manufacturer in Slovenia right after Yugoslavia had its civil war. And in that effort, I coordinated the design and marketing of a European-manufactured school bus and a motor coach. So for part of this time, I was a bus dealer, technically. But as a result, I'm one of these few experts who worked extensively on both the operating side of the field and the automotive side. So I can sort of view everything from almost every perspective. I also was on National Academy of Science Committee. It was called the Committee on School Travel Safety. I was a consultant to the creator of Super Shuttle, those blue vans you see at the airport. I was a consultant to Mitchell Rouse, the designer, during his creation and the startup. I wrote 23 years of monthly articles on the theme of safety and liability for mostly a motor coach magazine called National Bus Trader. I wrote 5 years of monthly articles on crossing for School Transportation News, because in school bus transportation, crossing is everything. I worked with numerous federal agencies, and one of them even worked for me on my Slovene project. I did consulting work in Russia, Slovenia, and Canada. So as a result of all these crazy things, I worked at very high levels on projects in every mode. And an important thing is that one learns a lot about one mode from the things you learn about others. So I had a chance to improve my knowledge about every mode from things I learned about all the other ones. So I know the industry standards of care in every mode. I know what the federal regulations are in every mode. I know a lot of state regulations from working in 45 states. I'm also, I think, the one who understands the most about system design, operations, management, and training. And I also know a lot about vehicles and maintenance and equipment. Vehicles and equipment, I should say. Maintenance is something I know conceptually, but I'm not an expert in that. And I'm also the one, I think, or one of the few experts who understands the most about the corruption and incompetence, the stuff that goes on behind the scenes in transportation, the dynamics, and who the major players are in each sector. So I'm that rare expert that knows which parties will never go to trial. I mean never. Even if they're going to win, they would never go to trial, especially against me. If they did, their empires would be over. So this is important stuff, and I was lucky to have all these experiences that led me to the position I could know these things.
It's really extraordinary. You know, apart from the opportunities that you have just noted, which, as you pointed out, you know, an attorney can't expect to find an expert with, what would you say are some other unusual or unique things about your background that has been very helpful to, and as at the same time, which you feel has contributed to what sounds like a very impressive success record?
Well, all right, this is pretty crazy. Well, cross-examination, as every attorney knows, is largely improvisational. I mean, the attorney has a chance to work out the questions, but I have to improvise the answers. I spent my early adulthood and at least 20 more years overlapping my transportation expert work as a jazz pianist. I'm a really advanced modern jazz pianist, and I've been doing that professionally since I was 13. I don't do it much often, you know, but basically I improvise. So no attorney, much less somebody who doesn't know the subject matter of transportation or someone who never spent 50 years in it nearly, nobody's going to be able to cross-examine someone who can improvise like I can. So that's a tremendous advantage. Also, I'm an English major and a magazine writer. That's kind of helpful. And ironically, about 50 years ago, I spent one semester in law school. I mean, I hated it, but one learns a lot in the first semester of law school. I mean, we had four courses. We had contracts, torts, which is negligence, criminal law, and legal research. And keep in mind that in public transportation, much of what goes on and much of what causes most of the incidents is criminal. So I had an extraordinary chance to learn all these things, you know, the way an attorney would his or her first semester in law school, because I actually did this.
That's amazing, really. It's absolutely amazing what you're sharing, and I'm thanking you for sharing all of this with us. It's very insightful and empowering. Give me an example of some of the techniques you employ that you find most other experts actually don't.
And yeah, and you're right, and interesting. I don't think most experts do these things either. First of all, when I write reports, you can usually write a draft that's not discoverable, and I tend to write what I call a fear draft as a draft. Some attorneys actually like them. Most attorneys want me to dry them out, but they're mean and nasty, and I really go after people, and it gives the attorneys a sense of what I can do if they let me. But these are only drafts. They're not, you know, and I don't have a pride of authorship because I'm a professional writer, so an attorney can take this draft and take a meat axe and cut out entire pages and stuff, and as long as I can support it, I'm fine with that. I also have some interesting strategies I employ in cross-examination that I don't know that, because I've read, you know, hundreds and hundreds of depositions. I don't think most experts do this, but one of the goals is to tell the whole truth. You know, that's what I took an oath to. When I tell the whole truth, it makes follow-up questions very difficult to answer because I'm a long way from the original question. I also finish my answers. I don't care how short opposing counsel would like them to be. I don't care how often I'm threatened or criticized for being wordy. I finish my answers. It's my business what I want to answer. And I also, and this is a something I did from the first case I ever did, and I don't know why more people don't do this, I always go into a deposition with a detailed bullet point outline of every opinion I'm going to render. So I have written down the bases for my answers. No one can ask me, Mr. Einstein, what is the basis of that opinion? Well, I've got it written down right in front of me. And also, that outline preserves my right to render these opinions at trial. If something's not covered, it's on my outline, so it's covered. If the attorney didn't cover it in the deposition, too bad. And finally, in those cases where I can hand this to opposing counsel at the outset of a deposition, that sort of disrupts or destroys his or her ability to, you know, to prepare for the deposition. They have to throw their notepad away and start all over again with my outline. So it's just a couple tricks, but I employ them a lot, and I think I get a lot of mileage out of those.
Other than word of mouth, you know, I understand that getting work as an expert today really is highly dependent on one's website. Maybe you can share with us about what you've done at the website and even at the SEO level to both attract clients and anything special you've done along those lines.
Yeah, that's a great question because I have done something really interesting I'll get to. But first, my main website, which is transalt.com, since I've been in transportation almost 50 years now, it's an encyclopedia of content. It contains the most detailed information you're ever going to find in one place about every mode of transportation, sometimes from a viewpoint of what I've done in them, but without reading hundreds or thousands of articles, it's a Bible on public transportation in every mode. It includes important principles essential to winning cases and winning them big. I'll identify those in a few minutes, I hope. I also have five other what I call public interest websites that are actually up and running that deal with common incident and accident scenarios. One is called safetycompromises.com, which is why half the incidents I've done have happened and compromised safety for other goals. I have another one up called crossingaccidents.com, a third one called turningaccidents.com, a fourth called passengerandwheelchairsecurement.com, and a fifth called wheelchairtipovers.com. So if you use all these websites as your Bible, you don't have to like me, you don't have to engage me, but this stuff is out there. It's a treatise on, these are long websites. They have tons of information about the subject matter. They would help you engage another expert and teach you about the rudiments of a case and some of the nuances of the case. Also, and this is the most interesting, over the decades of expert work, I've learned almost what all the most incident scenarios are. Earlier in this chat, I rattled off some of the major ones, but I know everyone, and my main website has a section called Common Incident and Accident Scenarios, and it gives you a couple pages of information about each one. So over the years, I reserved a monopoly of 43 domains covering every conceivable incident scenario. In other words, I have the monopoly. So I'm soon really going to sell the entire set. I'm nearing the end of my career. I hope to sell the entire batch of them to some huge law firm with offices in multiple cities. So thanks to Close Up Radio and TV, you know, those of you who are listening today, you've just gotten the first advance notice of this opportunity. And I want to give back to Close Up Radio and TV by mentioning that.
We really appreciate that as well. Now, you promised to give the listeners on Close Up Radio maybe some criticisms about attorneys. So what would you say they are?
Okay, and this is going to hurt a lot of you, but it's important to do this. For starters, most experts, good and bad, most experts do not like most attorneys, and they have the same criticism I do. Most experts don't share these feelings with attorneys. They want attorneys to like them. Where I'm unusual is I don't care who likes me. I really don't care. I never cared. I've always had plenty of work. Again, I've had a lucky career. I know a lot of stuff. So I don't care if somebody likes me. That's not my duty. I feel my duty is to have my attorneys win. That's my duty. I've helped a lot of attorneys win a lot, and they've never hired me again because they don't like me. Too bad. My goal is to help them win. On a plaintiff's side, the main goal is to not have them leave money on the table by not taking full advantage of the evidence. And on the defendant's side, keep in mind, I'm a member of the transportation community, so I want to help fend off plaintiffs' attempts to steal money from carriers that they don't deserve. And frankly, you know, most experts think the majority of attorneys are lazy and pound foolish, a nice way of saying cheap. Many of them are crooked. Many of them are outright stupid. But, you know, I don't expect an expert in the law to be an expert in the subject matter. And it's a lot more complex. This is what an expert's for. I think it's my job to teach the attorney what the case is about. I just hope that they listen.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Is this feeling universal, or are these other exceptions to this?
Oh, of course there are exceptions. And that's I've had the privilege of working for many, many attorneys who are genuine exceptions to this rule. The word is exceptions. Majority are like I described. But the exceptions, this is the heart. I mean, you really nailed it with this question. These are the thrills and chills of being an expert witness, is working for the exceptions. The thrill of being an expert is not the money you make, the big house you can buy, any of that. It's not the challenge. It's not even the learning. The thrill is working for and working with an attorney who is an exception to the rule. Sometimes I've been in awe of the judgment of some of the attorneys I work for, in awe of their decency, their passion, their devotion to justice, their concern for their clients. I've worked for some who lost money even to win the case. Most of them win much, much more than majority of lousy, cheap, lazy attorneys. So it really pays to be that kind of attorney rather than you know, count the dollars you're paying to an expert. And the real thrill is, you know, on being part of a team where you can really pound a stake in the opponent's heart. I mean, that's the thrill. There's no thrill in working for someone who cares mostly about how little he can spend on an expert.
Exactly. We've got about 4.5 minutes left. Our clock is really ticking fast here. But tell us some of the most important things about the subject matter of which you're an expert, public transportation.
Okay. I believe that first of all, transportation, despite what you might think or hear, is the most corrupt, dirtiest sector of any industry in this country. It's absolutely the worst. There are three elements to performance. There's safety, there's reliability, your on-time performance, and there's efficiency. Very few attorneys realize that the last two of these, on-time performance and efficiencies, have an enormous impact on safety. If you're running behind schedule, you're not going to do anything safe if it takes time. This is what I call safety compromises, and you can read a lot about this on my website called Safety Compromises. A lot of these things are also deliberate. Running behind schedule is deliberate. It's the underlying cause of half of all the transportation incidents I do. And it's particularly lucrative for contractors and brokers. You know, they don't care. They don't care about safety. They just care about money. And so when I was in consulting and all of my years in operations, I dealt with efficiency and on-time performance mostly. So I know how these things relate to safety.
As a technical expert, not an attorney, from your perspective, what is the structure of a lawsuit? What are the components?
Okay, in the simplest terms, I think there are three elements. There's the law, of course, the context. There's the subject matter, which encompasses the facts, and the facts and the evidence. And once in a while, the case is mostly about the law, but most cases are about the subject matter. So when I take a case, I want a chance to share my thoughts and recommendations about how an attorney can see the case from the perspective of the subject matter.
You know, it's really amazing. There is so much to really for an attorney to digest. Do you have, in like the 2 minutes that we've got, any final comments about all this incredible material?
Yes, and I'll race through these quickly. A couple things that I do that are really worth doing. One is recognizing that a lot of companies have what I call commercial agendas. You can read a long explanation of this on my website. Reality is a lot of big defendants have too much at stake. They're not going to trial. Even if they win, they're not going to trial. They'll lose their entire empire. So you have to know that. Another specialty of mine is injunctive relief. Judges don't hand them out so quickly, but the risk is always there. And big defendants are not going to take that risk. So that strategy is greatly underutilized, but I've helped attorneys win extraordinary amounts of money by filing for injunctive relief.
That's incredible. This really has been extraordinary. Mr. Einstein, this has been not only extraordinary, but very interesting and with unusual insights as well. I hope the listeners tune in to the subsequent interviews with expert witness, Mr. Einstein, as he has suggested. And if folks want to make contact, they can email you directly at Einstein, that's E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N, at transalt.com. That is T-R-A-N-S. ALT.com, website also transalt.com. Truly an honor and a pleasure, Mr. Einstein. Thank you for joining us on Close Up Radio today.
Yeah, welcome, and thank you for letting me get so much information out. Questions were terrific, and I enjoyed listening to you and working with you.
I hope we do it again, and keep up the extraordinary work, and can't wait to hear your jazz music, too. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that may meet me in the future. Thank you.
That's it. Thank you very much. Our very special guest, transportation expert, Ned Einstein. Again, the website, transalt.com. I'm your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time till next time, and inviting you to stay right there, another extraordinary guest to be celebrated in about 30 minutes right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a terrific day. Thanks for listening to this episode of Close Up Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.